Hello and welcome back to Creative Control, the entertainment podcast. I'm your host, Kenan, and thank you very much for joining us on today's episode. It's going to be a bit of a strange one for me today because I'm a little bit out of my element. So I'm going to be entrusting to one of our guests today on the show. But my left-hand man, as I always say, Neil, is on the show. And for the longest time, welcome back, Chris. How you doing?
How you doing? Good.
It's good to have you. Chris. Chris is out on half term this week, so he's been able to free up some time, which has been brilliant. So it's really great to have you back on the show. And today we are going to be talking about a subject which Chris knows a lot more about than myself or Neil. I had to definitely do my research before we started delving into this, and so I think for some of our listeners, they'll be very much on the side of myself and Neil. We're like, what is this? What does it mean? What can we look forward to? And that is, we're going to be talking about Henry Cavill and his involvement with the Warhammer 40K series and movie, which is in development. So just before we move on, I just want to say again, thank you very much for being here. And if you haven't already, please make sure you hit that like and subscribe to our YouTube channel. If you want to check out the video version of this podcast, you can see on YouTube and Spotify. And for the audio version, you can get it on Spotify and all other major podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Audible, Good Pods. We are everywhere. So thank you very much. So you may be asking, what is Warhammer? Okay, so I'm going to sum it up slightly here, and then we're going to go into a little bit more about it. So Warhammer 4000 or Warhammer 40K, it's a miniature war game produced by Games Workshop. So it's the most popular miniature war game in the world, and it's particularly popular in the UK. The first edition of the rulebook was published in September 1987, and the 10th and current edition was released in June 2023. So if you're thinking sort of like miniature war game, little minifigures, which are sort of like crafted and painted, it's also, think along the lines of like Dungeons and Dragons type of thing. So that's kind of give you the ballpark of where we are. Okay. And the reason why we're talking about it is Henry Cavill. Cavill came back as Superman at the end of Black Adam. And then, unfortunately, you know, that wasn't going anywhere because we got a new DCU from James Gunn and a new Superman being cast. So that, you know, pushed Cavill back out if he was ever really going to fully step back into the fold. But this is something that he is very, very passionate about, and he is a big fan. And it's not just something that he's getting involved with because of his name. So it was announced on December 18th, 2023, that Amazon Studios had acquired the rights to Warhammer 40K, and Henry Cavill will star and produce a TV series and a movie for them. Okay, so this is something that he posted on his Instagram, and he said, for 30 years I've dreamt of seeing Warhammer universe in live action. Now, after 22 years of experience in the industry, I finally feel I have the skill set and experience to guide a Warhammer cinematic universe into life. Partnering with Natalie Vercuso, I think it is, at Vertigo has been a blessing beyond words. Without her, we might have not found the perfect home at Amazon. And having a home like Amazon will give us the freedom to be true to the massive scope of Warhammer. To all you Warhammer fans out there, I promise to respect this IP that we love. I promise to bring you something familiar, and I endeavor to bring you something fantastic that is as of yet unseen. Our first steps to find our filmmaker slash creator slash writer. Watch this space, my friends, for the Emperor. All right. So this project is still in the very early stages of development. There's no official casting choices have been made yet or anything like that. The only thing we know is Cavill's going to be involved. Games Workshop is keeping a close eye on the IP, and it's built in caveats to the deal on how Amazon portrays its universe. So there's two big Warhammer projects officially coming, and it's obviously got the series and the movie. Cavill also recently shared some updates whilst doing the press tour for the film Argyle, and he spoke a little bit more about the project and his excitement for it. So again, I'm going to quote him. Warhammer is progressing very well, he said. Big things are happening and we're very excited. I've loved Warhammer since I was a boy, making this moment truly special for me. The opportunity to shepherd in the cinematic universe from its inception is quite the honor and the responsibility. I couldn't be more grateful for all the hard work put in by Vertigo, Amazon, and Games Workshop to make this happen. One step closer to making a nigh-on-lifetime dream come true. It's the greatest privilege of my professional career to have this opportunity. I can't say too much again. It's still early days, but to have this opportunity to bring it to the screen, to be at the tiller, can be faithful, is key to me. This is the stuff I've been dreaming since I was a kid. This is the stuff I spend my free time daydreaming about as an adult as well, and I get to bring it into life. There is no greater reason than I joined the industry than doing something like this. So by those words, you can see this man's passion for this project like no other. Do you know what I mean? And, exactly. And it's it's a passion project for him. They've recognized that because he's dripped it throughout interviews throughout the years when he's spoken about things, you know, and he's made it very well known that he's a huge fan of this. And so the reason we've got we brought this together today is Chris is available. Chris knows about Warhammer. So first of all, Chris, I'm just going to come to you first. And what are your thoughts about Cavill's involvement in this franchise or potential franchise? And then we'll go into specifically more about Warhammer and what it is.
I think, thanks, Ken. I mean, I looked when I was looking up coming to the podcast, I looked up the number of interviews he's done. It's been over the last few years that he's really pushed for it. I mean, I've just enjoyed seeing him champion something that is something so an antithesis of what people see him, regular people see him as. You know, people see the body, people see the looks, they see him as this good-looking guy. They don't realize, unless you've watched the Graham Norton from the past, where he's on with Russell Crowe, and where he talks about the fact that he was overweight, he was not a happy kid when he was at school. And he was at school when Crowe went and filmed Proof of Life, which I know I saw with Ken, actually, I think, way a long time ago, 1999, that is. But when Cavill was up filming, when Russell Crowe was up filming that, he met Henry Cavill on the side of a rugby pitch and said, oh, I'm definitely going to be an actor. And then lo and behold, many years later, they sat on the same sofa on Graham Norton.
That's right,
And so he's been... I would say that Warhammer is something that does appeal to the geek and a lot of people, and therefore doesn't always, you know, those kinds of kids are the ones who are going to be, unfortunately, playing it. And I think I'm really happy for him to be doing it. A passion project for him. He said apparently he's been playing Warhammer or been involved in it since he was 10. And the other thing that I find really lovely about him is that when he did the interview about, not so much about this, but about Superman, where he said he nearly missed the phone call because he was playing World of Warcraft. And he couldn't come off the game to finish the game because he was too busy playing to take the phone call. So, I mean, this is a guy who I think is, through his own choice, loves fantasy, loves this the role play sort of situation where he's playing in a different universe, given the kind of characters he's portrayed, even going back before, you know, the Gods and Emperors before that, which is he loves that kind of fantasy element. This is the stuff he's drawn to.
Oh, yeah.
So, I think it's really fantastic. And it's going to be Gods of Egypt, maybe it could have been.
Immortals.
Immortals, that's the one. Sorry, there's been a few of those ones. But basically, he's been involved in this in one way or another. So I think it can't anything be anything but good to have someone so passionate and so knowledgeable about the universe taking it on as a producer as well as an actor. So the producer bit is the important bit. He said that about Witcher before he left. He said that he found it hard working on Witcher because he played it and knew it, and the people he was working with weren't necessarily fans, and there was a little bit of that issue when he was coming to portraying the characters.
I'm very happy. Yeah, I'm very happy for him because, he came to a period where, you know, maybe he dropped Witcher, maybe for creative reasons, but was he in the thought process if he might be going into the Superman phase again? Do you know what I mean? It's like, but two big franchises of him seem to close their doors on him in terms of Superman and The Witcher. And then it was like, oh man, feel for this guy. He's too famous for Bond now. So you know he's not going to play James Bond.
Yeah, no, he's not.
And so it's like, well, what's next for him? And like you say, now that he has this creative side as well, and the fact that he's got the confidence to take that on, you know, because you know, like you say, he's been around the industry a long time, but somebody to take on that kind of responsibility as a producer, and it looks like he's going to take on that kind of Kevin Feige thing. Do you know what I mean? Where he's going to oversee it all is a big responsibility. So yeah.
Neil, what are your thoughts? It's okay. I'm kind of torn, if I'm honest. Mm-hmm. On one hand, I mean, we're all of roughly the same age, so we know, like, admitting you were a geek or a nerd or of that vein in school was like, you know, suicide in school. You were. Or beat up or both for that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you keep that stuff to yourself. So the inner child in me that remembers those times is like over the moon in love with the fact that Henry Cavill, you know, the former Superman, 6 foot something, built like a freaking Roman statue, mm-hmm. is happy to admit that he is a nerd, that he is one yeah. of us. So I love that. And him being who he is, his star power does mean that he'll be able to like marshal in and say, no, that's yeah. not accurate to mm-hmm. what's going on. So yeah. we're not doing that. The only problem, the other half, the where I'm torn, is I think a lot of films, TV shows, anything, when you get an adaptation of an existing thing, mm-hmm. especially when it's existed, you know, like close to 40 years, this thing's like 35 years old now, right?
Mm, yeah.
There is a possibility, there's always a chance where it could be a little too nerdy, mm-hmm. and you know, you might need someone there to be like, that's not marketable.
Yes. So yeah, I understand.
You might want to change, you know, you might want to change the old lady mm-hmm. to maybe a middle-aged lady, and then we can get this hot actress to play her, you know. You might
yeah.
want to
no, you know, I know what you mean, yeah.
This character doesn't take off the helmet. Was it? Yeah, but it's you, and you know, women want to mm-hmm. see you in a film, so take off the mask. You know, it's. I think that the scary thing is whether it can be as profitable
mm-hmm.
or as marketable as we want it to be, whilst staying faithful. Because not, yeah. you know, at the end of the day, even something as like Lord of the Rings,
mm-hmm.
as amazing as it was still quite faithful, but it had to make some serious changes here and there.
Yeah.
No, the simple story for some marketability, 100%. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it kind of reminds me a little bit of the fact that, you know, we had a World of Warcraft movie.
Yeah.
Or right? was based mm-hmm. off a really popular game that loads of people played. It just didn't perform that well. Now, I've mm-hmm. never played World of Warcraft and I haven't actually seen the movie, so I don't know how closely those are connected.
Yeah.
But are either of you familiar with both those kind of franchises in terms of the game?
Yeah, I played it. I do play it. I play it occasionally. What about Neil? Mm-hmm.
And how was the movie?
I never played it, but I watched like all of their cutscenes and trailers and stuff. Oh. Yeah, I always watched cinematic.
So I mean, the first film, just too long there, but the first Warcraft film apparently didn't do well with us, but apparently did very well in Asia. And yeah, actually yeah. Marketing wise did do a lot better. It was fairly faithful within what it needed to be in telling the sort of origin story of not so much World of Warcraft, because bear in mind there's been Warcraft strategy games back into the 90s. World yeah. of Warcraft was an MMOG in 2003, so Blizzard was making Warcraft games, three Warcraft games before that, that was RTS mm-hmm. strategy. So yeah. it tells the story of that, the initial world building. And I wouldn't be surprised, funnily enough, if you don't see, since Microsoft's taken over Activision Blizzard and now own the rights to it, I wouldn't be surprised to see maybe in the future, if it does better in the current situation, a return. Not necessarily yeah. the same actors, but that is almost like, put Warcraft film number one as like the prequels and okay. the World of Warcraft as like New Hope, that bit, like there's a time stretch there yeah. of ancestors, mm-hmm. so therefore you could go revisit it. But I mean, you're right about the marketing side of it. World of Warcraft is a good example where it didn't hit off as well as it could have done.
Mm-hmm.
So there yeah. is that worry. I totally agree with Neil there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, just before we go on to talking a little bit about Warhammer itself and what we can expect. Especially for our casual listeners who may not know about it. Henry Cavill has also been rumored to be signing up with the MCU for a role.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's rumors that he could be playing Doctor Doom and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. In terms of because he has this such a project with Amazon, with Warhammer as a producer and a series and a movie, what yeah. kind of role do you think he could actually take on with the MCU, which would give him that flexibility to be able to mm-hmm. commit to these two different potentially big franchises? Because Doctor Doom potentially is one, because he could film a movie, or he would film segments where, like Thanos, it takes years for us to get yeah. to him. Or mm-hmm. is it actually going to be more of a one-and-done kind of appearance, you know, where he just appears mm-hmm. in one movie? What do you guys
John Krasinski
do
you think style. It's going to...
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. Do you think it's going to... Do you think that's going to make a difference in terms of what he does with the MCU?
I don't think it will.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason I don't think it will is because as Cavill is now, he's not just starring in Warhammer, he's actually producing it. Mm-hmm. I think he will make sure that there is no conflict. He will be like, no. January through March, we're doing this. Mm-hmm. April through May, we're doing that. And like that is where we have to be. Mm-hmm. And I it wouldn't surprise me. It's weird when for casual listeners, it's going to be weird when I say it. For us, not so much. I think it would be very likely that if there was a conflict of interest, Marvel would lose out.
Yeah.
I think he would rather step away from Marvel and do Warhammer and make sure Warhammer is right than be like, well, I can't be in Warhammer now.
He takes that responsibility because Games Workshop have licensed out their IP in a number of ways, video games, animations, but they always have a very tight control over what they put out there because they've always been very protective of their IP.
Yeah.
And Space Marines coming in 40K are essentially their own creation in that respect. They are, if anyone tries to produce any miniatures that are similar, they send out the legal team, they are put into court and they're cease and desist. They are very protective of Space Marines. They can't protect their fantasy games as much because Lotra was one that's a different franchise. And the fantasy game they had, they recently destroyed, literally blew it up in their lore, blew it up and recreated it so they could move away from generic fantasy tropes so they could copyright their material. They are very clear about what is theirs and what isn't. And Cavill knows that. And the fans are just not, or even more militant than, say, Marvel fans can be if things go wrong. They will be, there's a lot of positivity, but if things get portrayed badly or if things get changed, I mean, to give you an example, just to give you a small example, they released a book recently, this new fantasy game they've got called The Old World. No plug there, men. They released a novel, just a novel. It's a basic fantasy novel with knights of the Round Table type stuff. But instead of having men, which they've always had men as the knights in this King Kingdom that we're working with, this faction, all the knights were women.
Right.
The amount of stuff online, if you were a fan of it, that came out literally losing their minds was amazing. And so Cavill knows, from what your comments you even quoted him as, he knows it's important. I don't think it's going to be a big role. I don't think it's going to be Doom. Although he could pull it off, and I was quite happy when it got linked, he could pull it off. The first person I felt might have it. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to be. It could be a Captain Britain. It could be a one and done. It could be a small segment thing. Yeah. But I think, as Neil said, I agree with Neil 100%. He'll schedule it so that he is focused on what he sees as his most important responsibility because he knows without this, there won't be anything going forward.
I mean,
MCU, I think I think as well, it's a thing to consider is that right now, I think the kind of tabletop slash like video game, that kind of the kind of world building type games, such as Warcraft, such as Dungeons and Dragons, such as, you know, Warhammer. I think things like that right now, they are in the same boat, or they're at that stage where I think comic book films and that were when like Spider-Man and Daredevil and that started coming out, where it was like you can either go really good or you can go really bad.
But they are an IP to mine. That's the thing. You're right in that respect, Neil. They are at the start of the Marvels, Marvel Studios, where they could mine what they have from the IP. And believe me, as we get into it, you'll find there is so much depth in not just 40K. They've got a whole fantasy universe they could mine with great characters. Like, there is so much to mine here that could be done properly in a film situation that would actually be engaging if, as Neil said, it's done well with passion, which is what Cavill's going to bring. That's the key. Having him to oversee it and know from a fan's perspective, but also, as you said, with the marketing perspective next to him, I think we, as long as he keeps his focus on it, I can't see how he couldn't get it at least on the money, if not profitable. We'll see that later, but you know, yeah.
Okay. All right. So let's talk a little bit more about Warhammer and kind of what it is and what we can expect from this IP. So as I mentioned, Warhammer is a miniature war game, and a Warhammer collection is very unique to each person. You know, it's how you choose to build up your collection is entirely up to you. Whether it's recreating a particular story, how you paint your miniatures, that's the thing. And one of the most rewarding things about Warhammer, I understand, is obviously creating that collection, is buying those pieces, putting them together and painting them how you want to paint them, you know, and creating your own kind of style. So you've got human soldiers, you've got demons, a mechanical construct, there's all this kind of stuff. And the way it's kind of done is players enact battles using miniature models of warriors and fighting vehicles. They play on a tabletop model of a battlefield, and it compromises of buildings, trees, hills, terrain. It can be like multi-platform, you know, it's not just a flat board. And each player takes turns moving their model warriors around the battlefield and fighting their opponents. And you use dice and arithmetic, you know, to progress through the game. It's a huge IP. You know, I didn't even realize it. There's loads of novels, loads of books for Warhammer in terms of all the different stories and stuff like that there is to be told. There's actually a Warhammer TV, which is Warhammer
recently TV Plus, launched. They recently launched the IP stuff and past stuff. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. And they've got loads of patch animation series on the Warhammer TV and stuff like that. So it's much bigger than what I comprehended it to be, really. But essentially, Warhammer 40,000 is set in the distant future, and there's stagnant human civilization, hostile aliens, and supernatural creatures. Basically, the models in the game are a mixture of humans, aliens, monsters. They got futuristic weaponry, supernatural powers. And it's, yeah, like I said, you've got this basically back the novelization, which kind of expands that lore. And, so it's kind of got a medieval element to it, but it's also got that futuristic and alien part of it as well. So it can span all these different kind of genres, amazingly well. So they, in terms of what they can delve into, is huge. So apparently it's set around the turn of the 34th millennium. So about 39,000 years in the future.
Well, for 40,
although it's mostly science.
41st. So yeah, 41. For 39 going to 40, they've moved the needle slightly every so often just to keep it going.
Okay. Okay. Nice. Okay. Yeah. So you've got races of orcs and elves, and you've got is it seekers or psychers who've got like a wizardry kind of element to them. Right, okay. So I've got some stuff about the Imperium, Armies of Chaos, Xenos, and stuff like that, but I think Chris might be able to tell us a little bit more about that. So, Chris, you want to kind of break that down to us? You know, what are these different factions? Who are they? What do they mean? Because I'm supposing when you're playing this game, you pick a... Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, I suppose you pick a faction that you want to follow?
Yeah, sure. I mean, what I'll say to you is that... I'll give you like an overview. That's right.
Okay.
So like it's grim dark. So those of you watch Star Trek or like that, where it's like a new idealized future of human civilization where everyone's happy and everyone doesn't have jobs and there's no money and all this kind of flowery stuff. That ain't 40K. 40K is, yeah, as you said, dystopian. It's broken down. That age is gone. And we're left with like, no, seriously, it's more in terms of, if you've watched like the brutal bits and the cutthroat bits of like Game of Thrones, that's life. 40K. People have meager lives. They live, they die. They honestly never really know what's going on around them. And there are billions of these people living on these hive cities on Earth. And there is an Earth, Terra. No, there is focus. It is focused in the Milky Way. Essentially, so there's a Terra, there's a Mars, there's a Titan. You know, there are planets that are recognizable to viewers from the in terms of the main stuff.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So it's almost like past Star Trek. It's like Star Trek has happened. The Federation's collapsed.
Yeah, fallen apart.
And then civilization's gone into anarchy. So that's why you have future elements in it.
All technology is lost, all the way to like all that technological advancement. So we're in the second millennium now, essentially. So we're talking about the 41st millennium. So we're talking about 38,000 years in the future, if that makes sense. So that gives you sort of idea of like, because it is meant to come from our Earth. It is meant to be our Earth. That's the whole point.
Right.
Okay, factions. Try and be quick as possible.
So no, don't worry. Go for it.
No. I could be here a long time. I don't want to be.
Okay.
And also, for the fans of 40K, I apologize because I've done my best. And I know a lot about it, but I don't know everything. So leave the hate at home. If
sound
that's
off
the
in the comments.
The rules still apply, fans. You say something about Pocket, we will say something about Pocket.
Yeah, they will say something about it, I'm sure. So if you tag this with 40K, I believe you're going to get comments. So, right, Imperium. So the Imperium is like the human civilization. And at the moment, it is there's billions of regular humans. They have fighting and dying a la World War One. They're like the meat grinders. They're like every guy that goes forward who gets killed, there's another five guys to take him forward. They're conscripts. Mm-hmm. They're out there just fighting the good fight for the sake of their godlike emperor. And you heard that at the end of Cavill's post was for the emperor. That is the war cry. They see this godlike emperor as their savior, and they worship him. Okay, mourn him a bit later. So you've got the main Imperial Guard, which is like the main army, which has got the tanks, the aircraft, whatever. You've got even sub-factions there. So you've got the Adeptus Sororitas, which is a fully female part of the army that fights on behalf of the church. That they go out and root out corruption. And they are like, again, what a great IP. If you want to do something female-orientated, that is literally a female-orientated faction, you know, fighting against
the aliens.
And badass women kicking butt, you know, fantastic. That is all they're about. You've got the custodes, which are basically the emperor's guardians. Now, this is the army that Cavill collects, so that's why I want to mention it. So, Adeptus Custodes, 1,000 strong, they protect the emperor. I'll go into more about why he's protecting him a bit later. But they are like the supermen. They're like cloned off of the emperor. So they are like you've got regular guys, you've got marines, got Primarchs will come later. You've got custodes. They are like the supermen of the supermen. That's why
soldiers, right?
Again, being Superman, I can see why he was interested in wanting the Supermen as his faction,
right?
But they are, they protect the Emperor, they're the bodyguard. Now, the Imperial Guard can do things in numbers, but the Emperor decided they needed a bit more surgical, more SAS style thing, so he genetically created the Space Marines. So he really did literally genetic modification. So you've got like a 5'7", 5'8" guard. You've got a 6'7", 6'8" marine. They're clad in the best armor he can find. Got the best weapons, better technology. They are they're the scalpel. The Imperial Guard is the hammer. They're the scalpel. Is the way it's supposed to say. They go in. They destabilize things. And a small force of Space Marines can do the job of a whole army of guard. It's essentially the law.
Yo, I might just pick up a book. Like, this sounds cool.
Basically,
they
often fight together. They often fight together. So you might have a force of Space Marines will come in. If it's identified as a threat, they'll jump in behind enemy lines. The guard are fighting the front line, and then they'll be worked together. So there's a lot of that. But the Space Marines don't see the Emperor as a god. Mm-hmm. He's more like a father to them. So he's not a deity to the Space Marines. That's a subtle difference. They see him as their father. And they're divided into 1,000 strong chapters. They're called chapters. Very sort of Romanesque sort of Roman Empire-esque sort of thing of organization. Yeah. Right? So, because the words legion is thrown out later on and stuff. So there's a lot of that in that. They are in 1,000 strong chapters. Now, the best bit is that these chapters, there's many of them that I can't go into right now. It'd be too hard to go into all of them. They often have a specific fighting style. One called the Raven Guard do stealth and stealth attacks. One, the White Scars fight mainly from bikes. You've got the Blood Angels, who I want to talk about later. They're my favorites. They're like space vampires, and I can't say more about them now. But they're involved in blood. There's a curse. It's great. It's really storyific. They're just I can't even. So I'll talk about it a bit more later. So basically, but there's all like all these different factions, all these different little chapters have their own fighting styles, and that's the point. They can all do different. They all excel in different areas. Cyborgs, you mentioned the Astra Mechanicum. That's Mars. They separated from Earth. They are like part human, part machine, and they're like artificers and builders. So they build a lot of the weaponry for the Emperor's armies, but they are allowed to be almost separate from the Imperium. They don't have to follow necessarily the God Emperor. They have their own God, which is the machine God. Mm-hmm. But so they are there, but they are not necessarily into the structure. Right. And that, if you can imagine, that's just one faction. Essentially, there's many factions within that. Yeah. That is the Imperium. That is just the human, you know, the good side of humans and like that, right? Mm-hmm. So you've got space elves, Aladari, once rulers of the cosmos, very much like the elves in Lotra. They once ruled this cosmos, the stars, spanning across planets, but with their own indolence and inward thinking, they end up causing their own downfall, which is another great story. And they now live on like floating spaceship called craft worlds, the remnants of their civilization, very much mirroring that elf thing of like, we once were in charge, now we've kind of caused our own downfall or been part of our own downfall through our own vices and our own ideas. And now we are eking out and holding on to our role, but we're not as powerful as we once were.
Yeah.
There are a couple of others I need to mention by name because I'll get shot down. So we've got League of Voltan, which are space dwarves, or they were originally called Squats. Stubborn, gifted with tech, probably Scottish, you know, that kind of thing. It's like you can see that character. Like they are, and the reason they kind of were in it at the beginning in 97, 90, and they got taken out because the person who owned the IP left the company and they removed all the mention of the Squats. In fact, they killed them off in the lore. Oh, and they've recently been reintroduced with new models and new faction as League of Volta. And the last good guys is the Tau. Well, I say good guys. They're like aliens. They're very humanoid aliens. They evolve differently to the Imperium. They don't have necessarily the warp technology you'll understand from, say, Star Trek, where they can jump to stars and jump through space very quickly. So they are limited with their expansion, but they have got a lot of other advanced technology that is not like the Imperium. So the advances in like plasma weaponry and stuff that they've made, you know, rail guns and things like that, kind of technology. They've brought up that way. So they are high tech, but in a different way. So,
yeah.
I mean, put it plainly, that is what you would consider the good guys or the neutral guys. That's just them.
Okay.
You've got the next bit is a bit shorter because the main bad guys will come to, but like Tyranids, think the bugs in Dust Troopers. Overlanding swarm of bugs that adapt to their fighting. So if they're fighting space marines, they'll churn out bugs that are specialists to affect them. If they're fighting the humans, they'll do this. They devour planets and biomass, a never-ending swarm. They are an existential threat to the whole universe. Can't be reasoned with. They're a hive mind. They are psychically linked. So, and it just, it's a great bad guy to have because it's a swarm mentality thing. And you're fighting hordes and stuff like that. You mentioned the orcs. I mean, they are, I mean, if you know orcs in fantasy, you know orcs in 40K. Just think the same guys, but with guns and crude weaponry and that boisterous attitude just basically causing carnage. And and the more there are, the better they are, etc., and that kind of thing.
Okay.
With a couple of cunning kind of high guys or like the cunning ones who lead them in these attacks on planets and stuff. Mm-hmm. Necrons. Sounds great. They are great. They were alive 60 million years before this, and they were humanoid. They lived on planets where the radiation was so bad they had to transpose their identities and their thoughts and their you know themselves, their souls into metal bodies to avoid the ravages of their planets. And they were tricked into doing this, and then now they're stuck in like metallic skeletons. Think like Terminators. They can repair, they're living metal. They can like they're entombed on all these planets throughout the solar system, and they're gradually waking up. And so you could be living, there could be human civilization, suddenly 1,000 Necrons suddenly burst out with their weaponry and start retaking the planet. They think they own the. They think they own the. They did own the galaxy when they before they went to sleep, but they're on their way back. Evil space elves, Drukhai, Dukhari, space pirates. I mean, these guys. I just can't even get into it. Like, they have a curse on them, and the way they avoid that curse, and I'll come into that curse a bit later, is they inflict pain, sadistic pain, on others to stop the. To basically stretch their lives, and the more pain they cause, the longer they live. It's
okay
because that will tie in. I don't want to jump in because the main focus for bad guys is chaos. You talked about the demons and the gods. Mm-hmm. This is the main focus of the whole universe. When they're jumping from star to star in this warp, they go through an immaterium, a warp space in like a corridor. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Think of when you watch Star Wars, for example, you see them do a hyper jump, that little silvery bit around them. Think of that space as a physical thing. Mm-hmm. Now, so it's a place you go through, you travel through it very like instantly, necessarily. Or more like Star Trek, where it's a bit of a time. But whilst you're passing through this time, at the beginning of the worlds, beginning of the universe, you know, when the universe was created. There were some other races I won't go into, it's too long, that would travel through the stars. Mm. And they left their emotions in there, their feelings, their thoughts. And these coalesced into three main chaos gods at the time. Mm-hmm. Khorne, Tzeentch, Nurgle. Khorne is the, I'm going to read out his monikers of the names that he's called. The Blood God, Lord of Skulls, Lord of Rage, Lord of Blood, Taker of Skulls, and Karneth. He's basically about fighting and martial honor. He anywhere where there's fighting, he has an influence, and he basically can drive you onto fury and to unadulterated violence and push you over the edge of violence for violence's sake, not for the sake and then to put it down. He's his champions are generally always fighting, and the thing about him is he doesn't care where the skulls or blood come from, whether they come from his opponents or his followers. He doesn't care. As long as it flows. So the Chaos Gods are capricious. They do not care about their minions beyond what they can do for them. That's Khorne. Tzeentch is a trickster. He's more like the sage. He values knowledge and manipulates the fates of the worlds and sets things in motion. That's his kind of bag.
Great kind of Loki character.
Loki character, very much so. Likes to... anyone seeking like the psychic, you said about the magic, the psychic power to these sort of things that can manifest, he is a bad link for that. Like you can fall into his sway, wanting more knowledge and more power, and that he can give you that. And that's his way of getting you in. And in Nurgle, Plague Lord, Grandfather Nurgle, the Plague God, Lord of Pestilence, he's a funny one. He's seen sometimes as jolly. He's a little bit like a gardener of the world, but like someone who will chuck plagues out just to see what they do, like likes life, but also like this whole cycle of life and death is his thing. So you'll like get people and like, oh yeah, I'll give you loads of gifts of like this plague and that disease, and oh no, look what's done to you, your arm's fallen off, oh what a shame. And he won't care, but he likes to see the spread of this sort of pestilence and filth and like plague across the and see what happens. So he's a very much now we get to the really interesting one, and this is the one where the Eldari come in. The elves ruled the cosmos. They became inward-looking, indolent, and full of vices. They basically became self-satisfying. And around 10,000 years previous to this, the 31st millennium, there was a catastrophe where so many elves were doing this. They birthed the god of decadence and of death. Because the elves that are linked to the immaterium, they have a psychic link to that. They're very psychically oriented as a race. So their feelings, think about us feeling feelings and think about feeling them 10, 20-fold. So their feelings meant a lot more. Their lust, their sort of, think the seven deadly sins, those kind of things. Those and doing those kinds of things led to the birth of Slaanesh, which was the fourth chaos god. When he was birthed in this great cataclysmic event, the psychic shockwave killed billions of these Eldari, just like that. They all just fell stone dead. across the universe, across the whole universe, across galaxy, and planets blew up. So they basically, this is why the Aladaria and the Kravos, they caused their own downfall by birthing this god. Now, this god thirsts for souls, and he specifically wants those souls from the Aladari and the Drukhari. Now, the Aladari protect their souls by putting them into little stones, and they're reborn almost into different bodies later on. The Drukhari use pain and torture to stave him off from them. But basically, he's a dark prince. He's about, he's about those seven deadly sins. That's all his bag and that kind of thing. So, and it created an eye of terror, essentially a central point in the universe where chaos can enter the universe. That one event did all this. And that is chaos. And chaos is the big bad. Chaos is what the Imperium and all the other guys want to run from. Chaos, except for the Tyranids, you can't really assimilate them because they're magical beings, but they don't fear them necessarily. But like all the other races know to fear the demons that can be summoned. And there's more to it, which I want to go into later, but we'll take a break and get your feedback on that first.
This this sounds like, in my personal opinion, just listening to you talk, this sounds like what would have happened if Tolkien looked at the future instead of the past.
Yeah.
This is literally like, I'm listening to you talk, and I'm like, this is what, this is like what happens if, like, if Tolkien were around when he was making Lord of the Rings, and like, instead of like, you know, his friends being freaking Lewis Carroll, his friend was James Cameron and Ridley Scott. If those two were his friends, and it was like, and be like, I'm thinking of, you know, I think, like, you know, we have a different race, similar to human but different, and we're like, make them space elves.
It's like Tolkien, Lucas, and Cameron all sat in a room together, and we're like,
this is what happens in the game that's 35 years old. The game is started off small, and it just and as they wrote things in, it just evolved, and so now we've got to this point where 35 years down the line, 10 editions in, they've established this whole world of characters and races that are now, you know, part of this very rich tapestry and interlinked sort of existence, with chaos almost there as like the other side of the other side of, I think, Stranger Things, like, you know, flip on the other side of it, chaos is there, and honestly, that's not even the best bits about chaos in terms of those other bits, the main bits, but the main, okay, now you go first, because I know I've got like the main story that I think.
I think you summed that up really well. And so now I've got a really decent understanding of, like you say, the Fraction and what it's about. And it sounds awesome. I'm not going to lie, because like you say, you've got these different, you know, each Fraction has got its own subsidiary sort of like sections and parts and stuff like that. And you can see why, from a board game, or, you know, from a war game kind of view, how collectible and how people get involved in this kind of stuff, because they'll like a particular faction and they'll build on that and develop on that. But there's so much to explore. And I love the fact that it's a cross of between all these different styles. You know, you have sort of like almost your medieval style and your, you know, dystopian future style. You have fantasy, you have mechanics and actual science and technology and stuff like that, and so the fact that it's all built in together, it sounds awesome. And I'm like, you know what, maybe I'm not going to be a board gamer, but I'd like to see, like, maybe pick up a book and read this, do you know what I mean, and just have a little look, because this sounds fascinating.
I ain't gonna lie, as you were talking, I think you weren't out of humans yet.
No,
right? We were talking, and I was like right, okay, so
I can get on board with some of this.
I was like, I started typing. I was like, Warhammer 40k books.
Yeah, right.
You know, because I love epic, like really, really epic storytelling. And this is just,
it's an epic, it's so big. Cavill's main focus is going to be, how do I narrow it into a sizable, we'll come to that, sizable entry level piece that I can hook people in without going too big. You go too big, it's like boom.
Well, I think like, you're going too big too fast.
And you can't start with just huge amounts of exposition. You know, something like if you think about something like Rebel Moon, the start of it was all exposition. Do you know what I mean? Trying to establish it. You need to build it slowly. And to me, it makes the most sense to go with a series first and then a movie. I could be wrong, but I think if you can play out all these factions in a series, then it culminates into a movie and it kind of goes back and forth. That makes the most sense to me.
Yeah, I see it as like being not having, you know, basically not being in the position of the MCU where you can make a story about one group of people, a story about another group of people, and then build it up. And then in like, you know,
there isn't that. Years,
then you can drop like, oh, here's the team up with everyone.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that team up. There isn't. There's very rarely a team up, say, between the Eldari and the Space Marines. The only ones who really team up the most are the Imperium in terms of the different parts of the Imperium. But even the Custodes are very rarely involved because they very rarely leave the palace the Emperor is in. Soratus will be. Soratus, Space Marines, Imperial Guard, they're the ones who are out there most of the time for the good guys. You know, living on that. And bear in mind that the human civilization is on many planets. It's not just on Earth. Mm-hmm. They have spread across the Milky Way, at least in the initial areas of it. So that is the main. Yeah, there is not like Eladari fighting with Space Marines, fighting with Voltan, League of Voltan. That doesn't really happen in the lore. Each faction is almost indistinct. The Imperium, etc., etc., and their motivations are different. You know, but sometimes you may get a crossover of characters in a smaller scale story, which I think Cavill needs to be looking at in terms of that. I can go on to what, if you want me to, Ken, I can go on.
Carry on, man. Carry on. The floor is
the main story, the main narrative that will probably tick a lot of your boxes again, which is the main narrative of the Horus Heresy. So this is why I'll explain a bit more about the Emperor now and his sort of him as a person and now as a god. So 10,000 years before, so we're in the 11,000 years, so 30th millennium. Earth is still struggling through this lack of technology. It's people are fighting people on Earth. There's no unified population, factions on the actual planet. Emperor, as in all sort of holy words, the Emperor suddenly arrives. He's there. And he bands humanity together on Earth. He's a very, very powerful psyker, as in user of powers himself, psychically gifted. He just amazing, kind of like the epitome, like just above and beyond everybody else who's been on that planet before. He gets everyone together. They unify as man, as one race, one planet, focused towards that. And he starts building up the planet, looking for this lost technology and helping them start the planet anew and build them up. And then what happens is about the 30th millennium, he sets out on the Great Crusade. Think Roman Empire here. Think setting off with armies of the Imperial Army and across the Milky Way to unify planets under the Imperium, under his protection. Now, when he said, I'll tell you about the Space Marines, he realized he couldn't do this with the Imperial Army. They weren't big enough. There weren't enough of them. Couldn't be split up enough. There were a lot, many, many, many billions of them, but not good enough to do what he wanted. So he created the Space Marines. But before he created the Space Marines, he created the Primarchs. 20 individuals cloned from the Emperor, not like the Custodes. These were going to be his generals. And he cloned them first. He made them first, better than the Space Marines. They were human, but they were better than the Space Marines. And they were going to be the generals of these Space Marines that he was going to create afterwards and lead them. Yes.
Question. Sorry.
Chris is going to teach your voice. I was like, yes, yeah. Question.
Custodes. Am I pronouncing it right? Custodes?
Custodes, yeah.
Yeah,
they're like Custodes. They're like genetically split from the Emperor, but they're not Primarchs. They're not Primarchs. So they are
Space Marines
They're not Space Marines. They're not. Right. I know it's really hard to say. So essentially, you've got the Emperor top of the pyramid, Custodes to be underneath, then Primarchs, then Space Marines, and then the Guard underneath. So much like Primarchs are lesser than the Custodes. Custodes are even more powerful than them in many respects. Is that okay?
All right, I'm with you now.
So these Primarchs were meant to be leading the armies, but Chaos Gods intervened. They took the 20 Primarchs and they scattered them across the universe, the Milky Way. They took them. There's no description of how. They are just, it's part of the mythos that they just scattered them. And they were not then grown and then like born and then allowed to develop under the Emperor's tutelage. They were left to grow independently on these different planets with their own values and their own personalities, and then obviously their own vices and their own flaws. So they all, again, like this, like I said about the chapters, and the chapters were bigger then. They were called legions back then. They were 10,000 strong back in the Crusade. They got split up later. They all had their way of war, you know. And so the Primarchs were meant to mirror that. They had one was an amazing general, like of all things. One was a stealth specialist. One was a bike specialist. One was this specialist. So they were meant to go with those chapters. Mm-hmm. And so when they got scattered, the Emperor was lost. He didn't know what to do. So he basically, look, I'm going to create the Space Marines anyway. I need the army. We'll go find them. So he sets out, he creates the Space Marines over a number of years, tens of thousands strong. Off they go on this great crusade, and they liberate these planets one by one from the taint of orcs or chaos or whatever. It's all there. And they go, but at this point, they're just like a cleansing flame across the galaxy. He finds the first Primarch, which is called Horus. Hence the name of the time. Yeah. Horus is that amazing captain. He's the general of all trades. He can do everything. He's a great reader of personalities. He can understand humans, much lesser on the scale to him, but he can understand their psychology. He knows how to fight battles. He's a brilliant tactician. He's the Caesar. He's the Caesar of all the Primarchs. He did everything, right? And he was found very early on. So it was really, for about 100 years, it was him and the Emperor together, just the two of them. Maybe a lot less bad, but basically it was the two of them for a number of years. And he learned from the Emperor straight away. And he knew it was the Emperor. When the Emperor came down to, because the Emperor could sense him, he went down to the planet, found him. Horus knew it was him. The Emperor was his father, and he knew that he'd been created by him, and it was a good coming together. Now, so favored son. Horus. They go through the planets. They find the other 18 Primarchs. A couple are lost, and we never find them. And they're on the rule books. It's redacted, like very mysterious. These Primarchs are never found, or they are found and not mentioned. I know, it's hilarious. So, but he goes through and finds the majority of the Primarchs, reunites them with their chapters, the Blood Angels, and the Imperial Fists, the Ultramarines, the Lunar Wolves, who would become the sons of Horus later. That's Horus's chapter, and they're all fighting on different fronts, spreading out across the galaxy. Now, the Emperor is focused on finding the Primarchs. He leaves Horus in charge a lot and goes off individually to find them, bring them back. And about 1,000 years after the start of the Crusade, there's a big battle called Arnor. And Horus does so well, like marshalling about three different Primarchs. The Imperial, he's balancing seven or eight plates on this planetary invasion, gets the biggest orc army he's ever seen across the whole planet. He wins. The Emperor at this point suddenly goes, I forgot the milk. He goes, I need to go back to Earth. I've got a project to work on. Horus, you're now war master. You're in charge of all your brothers. So now he's been elevated above his brothers. He's in charge. And then we start to see things go wrong. One of the chapters has been corrupted by chaos, the World Bearers. They arrange that Horus is going to be injured. They take him to a special moon. He is corrupted by chaos, and he is turned. And he turns fully half of the Primarchs and the Space Marine forces to the chaos side. I've shortened that by many, many lines because there's a lot of exposition there that I don't want to go into. Because one of the Primarchs was called Magnus. He's conned into virus bombing one of the other chapters' home planets. Realizes by Horus, he's evil. He realizes that he's done something wrong. He sends a psychic message to the Emperor because he's a big psycho, Magnus. He sends a psychic message to the Emperor trying to say, look, watch out. Emperor has outlawed psychics. He immediately calls him a traitor. He's not a traitor. He's tried to warn him, but he basically gets forced into being a bad guy. Horus traps three legions on a planet and then basically ambushes them and wipes them out and kills two of the Primarchs there. He absolutely makes a beeline for Earth. Now, he scatters the remaining legions with other forces to keep them busy. Mm-hmm. But his main force heads to the Imperial Palace, to Terra, lays siege. You've got one, maybe two chapters, two legions of Space Marines mm-hmm. at the palace, plus the custodes, plus the sororitas, plus all these people, but not many. And the mm-hmm. remains, and most of the army is out in space. They can't get back. Mm-hmm. Horus has got maybe five, six legions, plus his own, and he's laying siege. And eventually it becomes a point where the Emperor realizes he can't win the siege, no matter how much he holds mm-hmm. out. No one's coming to relieve them. So he teleports onto the Horus's barge, his ship, with Sanguinius, who is the Primarch of the Blood Angels, my favorite chapter. This is a Primarch who, due to when he was scattered, he got affected by the warp energies. He grew wings like an angel, okay. which is hence the Blood Angels. Mm-hmm. He's got a gift for premonition, like mm-hmm. fast foresight. He's a great warrior. He's not maybe at the level of the Emperor or Horus at this point, because Horus has got chaos now giving him power, but he's the level just below that. Mm-hmm. And so Sanguinius realizes he's got to go with the Emperor. When they get teleported onto the barge, they get separated. Sanguinius faces Horus first, and it's this whole thing of he chinks his armor. That's the best he can do. He gets a slight slip of his armor, and he's still crushed and killed by Horus. And he was almost one of his supporters. They were brothers mm-hmm. in arms. One of the people mm-hmm. who really championed Horus as being the war master and thought it was a good idea was Sanguinius. So this is like a real betrayal for that. And even in that battle, he tries to turn Sanguinius because he doesn't want to kill him, but he won't be turned from the Emperor. The Emperor then fights him. He fight because of a cataclysmic battle between the two. Horus is defeated, but mm-hmm. the Emperor is broken. Mm-hmm. He has to go on. He goes back to Earth. He's transported back to Earth and placed upon this golden stasis throne in the middle of Earth, where it was palace. Mm-hmm. And he is, of all intents and purposes, no longer active. His mind is active. His psychic beacon, which is like he sends out signal, is what they mm-hmm. tether onto when they're traveling through the warp to Terra. Mm-hmm. But his body is broken. He's now in stasis. And now, currently in 10,000 years later, he is fed psychers. He consumes them, their psychic energy to stay alive. That's how grim dark we're talking here. 10,000 a day.
Dang.
Damn.
So that story is the great betrayal and the great civil war of Marine versus Marine, brother versus brother.
Mm-hmm.
It's got, if you look on the Black Library, Neil, and look up Horus Heresy series, mm-hmm. there is 20 or so books novels of the storyfication of it. It is the key story for the Marines. It is the key forming story for
how
the Marines
are. Do you think that's where they will start? Do you think that's the entry point?
It could, no, not as an entry point. It's mm-hmm. too big. It's huge. Right. It's huge. You couldn't do Horus. You couldn't do the Emperor. It's mm-hmm. it's just massive. It's a galaxy span. They've done, it could be, but it's so hard to see how they would do it as a series.
Yeah,
it would take
the pressure on the writer films. Who's going to take this on.
I want to take this job.
Gary Abnett is the author. Dan Abnett is mm-hmm. the author of most of the Horus Heresy novels. There's a reason why he's the majority author. He has, and I think at least at the beginning he was, and then he's got other things. But that story is your typical story of the favored son falling to vice and falling to chaos and fighting against the father. I mean, the richness of it is massive.
Yeah. But do these stories play into the actual playing of the game? Or is it behind the characters?
The legions that fought with Horus didn't die. They escaped. Mm. So those, the Thousand Sons, the World Eaters, the Plague Guard, these are people who fought 10,000 years ago at the Siege of Terra. Those people are still alive in the Eye of Terra on the side of Chaos. Mm. They are still factions you can fight. So those Marines are 10,000 years old, but time moves differently. So there are people alive in the Coast Chaos forces who fought in the Siege 10,000 years ago.
Yeah.
There are no
loyalists. Do these narratives actually play into the game when you're playing? Are you aware of?
In terms of, you can do, yeah. And they have grand campaigns where you can, and they give you story support, and they give you faction books, and they move the faction on. You know, currently there is no Horus, but there is Abaddon, who is essentially Horus's clone. They cloned him. and he's led the Chaos forces recently. But there's also the Primarchs are still alive. Magnus, the one I told you about, he's still alive. The evil Primarchs all survived, changed by Chaos, turned into demons almost. Only recently having they in the board tabletop game revealed that some of the loyalist Primarchs who were alive back then, Lionel Johnson for the Dark Angels and Robert Gulliman for the Ultramarines, they've apparently have arrived alive in the 41st millennium. And so basically they're setting up for a whole new thing now in the board. I can't go into the board game, but that story is the foundation of the central foundation pillar for like the Marines and the Imperium. Obviously Space Marines are your selling point, so they want that. That's who you go into when you go into a shop, you're given a Space Marine to paint. Marine. So like that central pillar is the history of the Space Marines and why they fight against evil Space Marines and renegade Space Marines and Chaos Marines now.
Chris or Mr. Marland, as your students would say, that was a lesson, man. I enjoyed that. That's given me a lot to digest. And like you say, that I actually want to go and I just typed into now, like where to start. I need to buy a book now.
Book one starts when they're good. It starts at the good point when they're still out on the crusade. It still starts when they are fighting for the same goal. But you see,
I've just read there's like 300 books like available. Is that how big this thing
is? Not so the Horus Heresy, but for the Horus Heresy.
No. But for, So
Those novels are like
figure out where to start.
They're not. Sorry, where's my camera? They're not like thin novels. They're like novels, 600 pages.
Wow.
It'll be good to read. Honestly, when I pick one up, I read it and I've finished. I've not got into it that much, but like in terms of reading the book, because I don't have time. But
Okay. Because I understand that they've kind of moved away a little bit more from physical books now, and it's more about digital and
Black audio library books, what's called. As well. Yeah, Black Library is the site you can go to for that. Plugin intended, but basically that's where you're going to find the novels on your like devices and stuff.
I'm looking it up now, and you're like, you're saying Horus Heresy. I'm looking up Horus Heresy.
Okay.
I mean, that's the main story, but it's big. You want small stories.
I was gonna say it's I'm even more impressed if Cavill can pull this off. Do you know what I mean? Because of the scope of it, and like you say, it's finding the balance between sticking to the lore, appeasing the fans, but creating it be accessible enough to the general audience, because this needs to make bank.
I can add one last thing, just more.
Go for it.
I don't think it will be the series. I can't see it being the series. It's too big. You'd have to have too many characters. It'd be too all-encompassing, like way beyond anything, way beyond Lotra, the Rings of Power, beyond the size of that. It's on planets far, like galaxy spanning. So it's too big, I think. The one series that I think would be accessible is, if you might have seen it on the webpage, is Gaunt's Ghosts. Now, that is a sharp, but in 40K.
Okay.
Single regiment of 10, 20 guys or so fighting with a Colonel Gaunt. And they become involved in different... I don't know if anyone's seen Sharp, they would understand. Like, Sharp is set in the Napoleonic Wars. So Gaunt's Ghosts are set like he'd be sent to different planets.
That's Sean Bean Sharp, right?
Yeah. Sean Bean Sharp. Which I think, if you get Sean Bean in this and do a comedy, if they do a Gaunt's Ghost series and then get Sean Bean in that, that'd be brilliant. Because the author of it, when he first started, said it was meant to be Sharp, but in 40K. Small regiment, fighting different battles. Because you can be sent to different places. You could be posted like the army.
Yeah, yeah.
So they would fight, and then the characters are all within that little group. And it's a small group-based thing, and you move around location. You have different stories. And the books go from Gaunt's perspective, but also from a wider perspective. So there's a bit of play there. That, to me, and I think this has been echoed online, would be the good entry point because you keep it small scale.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And you introduce things gradually. Mm-hmm. And it's basically...
Yeah, you have to, because otherwise it'll become overwhelming. So, yeah.
It's too overwhelming to jump into. When you go into a shop and the attendants don't do this to you because they know that they just... Whoa, it's just so much to go on. That's one serious one you could do. There is a more funny one, Cypher's Cane. They're short stories, and they would be he's an Imperial Guard captain and he kind of just has really great luck. He's portrayed and propaganda as a massive hero, but really things just fall into play for him all the time. So, he gets victory in like the most weirdest ways. And he just doesn't, he's not even English. He's the one standing at the end going, "We won," kind of thing.
Yeah. Right. All right.
Okay. I mean, I can't see anything else. I can't see anything else, really. It's too big otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah. Neil, thoughts?
Damn. I mean, like, you were saying about stuff to get into. I'm jumping in with Horace. I'm like, I want to know that because that was You sold me before you sold me because I was like,
this right. Cool.
It's such an epic story, and there's so many parts where Primark fights Primark on the battlefield. So many where heroes fight hero. One of Horace's. Not everyone in Horus's legion turns bad, for example. Mm-hmm. Part of the legion stays loyal to the emperor. Mm-hmm. And there's a story about that within the one part of that legion is the reason why the emperor finds out. I don't want to say more than that because you won't want to read it, but basically the Horus Heresy was built up over, it's been built up, not necessarily changed, but it's been built up over years and years and years. They've had plenty of time to flesh this out and think about things slightly change things and tweak this and tweak that. And now they brought them into the tabletop. You know, currently you can purchase and play with on the good side, Angron, Magnus. 5 different Primarchs are available to play with on the tabletop. And they even changed the game to make it acceptable to have these almost galaxy or galaxy-wide heroes play in a small skirmish. Kind of
Actually been onto the Warhammer website and had a look at some of their videos, and they show some of the tabletop games. It looks amazing. It looks epic.
I think Cavill is very selective. He said this in an interview, bringing back to Cavill. He doesn't know what part he wants to play. I think he's got his eye on playing like the head of the custodes, the arch captain is called. Mm-hmm. That's what he's been talking about in some interviews, but he's not sure because he knows that as soon as he picks one character, that's it.
Yeah.
Like I said, there's so many.
Yeah, you can only be one character in this universe, so it needs to be. So many,
and the Emperor's not alive, but kind of alive. Yeah. You know, it's just such a hard. It's a hard choice for him. He's going to find it very hard, I think. Yeah. But I can't wait to see what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm excited.
I think Cavill's being interviewed for something to do with The Witcher. This is how far back this was. Mm-hmm. And he mentioned his love of World of Warcraft whilst being interviewed. And it's like the girl who plays Ciri is in the middle in between these two guys. The interviewer is on the other end of the room.
Yeah.
And Cavill said he mentioned that, you know, I'm part of this faction. And a guy said, "Oh, I'm part of like another faction."
Oh yeah. It was like an instant romance. It was just like they just started chatting.
We'll sort that out.
That's him saying we'll play. That's what he's saying. Like, we'll get together. That's like a thing. That was straight away. I could see that. It's hilarious. Yeah. And that's the thing. And you saw the other cast going like,
"We are talking about."
They're like, "What is going on?" Yeah.
I love it. Brilliant. I find it hilarious that because these people, the interviewers, don't have that level of passion for that project. That's such a geeky thing. So they are so unnerved by talking to him, beautiful man. I have no problem saying that.
He's a beautiful man.
And he's talking about something so geeky. You can see their brain short-circuiting where they're like not sure how to talk about
it. Process it. Because I remember one person asked him about something in an interview and he's like, "Where did you get your knowledge?" And Wikipedia is like, "Wikipedia?" He was like, "Are you crazy?" So
Anyway,
brilliant. All right. Well, look, Chris, thank you very much for that. And guys, you listening and watching, let us know your thoughts. Did you know about Warhammer before? How do you feel about it now that kind of Chris is breaking it down for us? Are you excited about this potential series and movie? We want to hear about it. So guys, thank you very much for joining me today. I really appreciate it. Chris. Thank you so much for the education.
I'll admit,
Chris, I'm intrigued. I'm going to go away and do some reading. Absolutely. So he
bought me expect an angry phone call from my wife at some point because there's going to be some money.
She'll be like, Chris, I had 50 books delivered. What is going on? Why? Stop talking to my husband about this.
My address. That's what I need. I need my influencer wages paid. That's what I need.
Thank you very much for listening, guys. We appreciate it. As always, please make sure you hit that like and subscribe. Make sure you sound off in the comments. Give us that feedback. What are some of the topics that you'd like us to talk about? Remember, we do TV and we're doing wrestling now as well. So make sure, if you haven't already, make sure you check out our wrestling podcast, The Squared Circle. It's part of Creative Control and we book the Elimination Chamber. And we're going to be doing another episode soon where we talk about the actual card when it's produced and our predictions for that. And then we'll do one for WrestleMania. So as always, thank you very much, guys. It's been a pleasure. Until next time,
gentlemen, let's broaden our minds.
This is the way.
This is the way.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Dead or alive, you are coming with me.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria.
Were you rushing or were you dragging?
That's what she said.
I don't want to brag, but I will. I was in the Avengers.
The Avengers?
Yeah.
That's great.
Thank you.
What is that?
Say my name.
I am the father.
Oh, chills. Literal chills.
It was number 5. Number 5 killed my brother.
Oh my God, I forgot about that part.